It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on 720 WGN. I'm going to give the phone number out now, if that's okay.
Please do.
Because we get a lot of calls when this guest is in the studio. Yep. 312-981-7200. His name is Dr. John Duffy. He's a highly sought-after clinical psychologist. He's an author and a really great book, number one best-selling book, The Available Parent, which I have not read cover to cover, but I'm telling you, Dr. Duffy, I read bits and pieces as needed, and you are pretty amazing.
Any way that it works for you, that's great.
So. You did a coloring book version for me, which is fantastic. I'm almost done. Two-thirds
of the way
through.
Working for you.
Oh, boy, is it ever. I'm staying in the lines, John. We really appreciate it.
All right. So being a parent is not the easiest thing on earth. And I joke about it sometimes on the air, Bill,
sure.
When I say, you know, I'm the worst parent. I don't think I'm bad. I love my kids and I try really hard, but I feel like I mess up all the time. Is that a common feeling?
That is a very common feeling. And I hear it almost every day. And I usually encourage, seriously, I do. And I usually encourage parents back way off that feeling. Usually, we're doing our best, right? And sometimes we're dealing with difficult circumstances. But if we're judging ourselves as we go, then we tend to make worse decisions, right? Because we're second guessing ourselves and we're thinking things through too much. Usually your instincts are pretty good as a parent, almost all the time.
Yeah.
So if you follow your instincts and fear isn't getting in the way and your judgment to your kid and yourself isn't getting in the way and your ego isn't getting in the way, chances are you're in your lane. You're where you need to be.
There were several times, John, I can't even tell you how many times, that I said to either one of my daughters, I've never done this before, and I'm going to get it right some of the time, but I'm going to get it wrong a lot of the time, too, so you got to bear with me and trust me. I'm trying to do everything for everybody's best benefit.
Right.
That's okay to show them that you're, I guess it's a weakness, but I wasn't embarrassed about the fact that this was all kind of new to me.
No, I love that, Bill, actually. You know, I think if we meta-communicate with our kids, if we talk to them about, like, what parenting is like for us, and, hey, sometimes I'm going to mess this up, and let's talk about that.
Yeah.
You know, like, it also models for them, hey, you don't have to be perfect. In fact, I'm not perfect. And, you know, we'll work together to make it through what are pretty difficult times and pretty difficult years. But short of that, if you present as a parent who is perfect, you know, that gives kids this like unrealistically high bar to try to live up to. They feel like they really can't communicate honestly and fully with their parents.
Yeah.
And it creates this wholly unnecessary disconnect between parents and kids. So I like your method a lot better than that. And
oh.
And the modeling part is huge.
And you know, like when we were growing up, and Bill, I don't know how your parents were to you, but they could never admit fault, you know? And there are some people like, you shall respect my authority and I'm your parent. I'm not saying to be their friend, because anytime there's something in the news where a baby's crying in a restaurant and other people get involved, it's like, oh, you have to do your job and parent them. I'm not saying be their best friend, but it's fine to admit you don't know what's going on.
It is. And it's also, I think we've overcorrected on not being our kids' friend sometimes, because when our kids cross into adolescence, we're not even willing to be friendly with them. This is what I hear from kids all the time is like, well, suddenly I feel like my parents are my adversaries. Like,
no.
You know, I'm working against them instead of them working with me suddenly. And it's really discombobulating for kids. They really don't know how to respond to a parent who is suddenly coming at them with, you know, why aren't you doing your homework? And, you know, where have you been? And, you know, this fear.
Right.
And kids are thinking, well, 2 years ago, we were just having fun. So what happened all of a sudden?
You know? What about this? I always hear people sometimes in your profession, sometimes not, say, don't bombard your kid with questions. However, in any conversation, there's a whole lot of questions. That's what a conversation is you say something, you ask a question, you say something, you ask another question. So how would you get around that without asking a bunch of questions?
There's so much we want to know from our kids, right? At a time when they stop talking openly, right?
Yeah.
And so what we're going to get is moments. Parents want hours. I worked with a mom recently who said, I'm really disappointed in myself. I wanted a family meeting for an hour every Sunday night, and I just can't get it with my teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you're never going to get that with your teenagers, you know? But if you get a moment, take the moment and take the conversation you get in the moment, and sometimes that'll stretch. Most of our kids regress sometime during the day and they act like they're younger. It might be bedtime. It might be first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
Take advantage of those times and get them to talk. But if you have a lecture that you're weaving into that, your kid's going to be savvy enough to recognize, oh, I'm being lectured here. This isn't really a conversation. This is a one-way street. So my bias is save the lecture for other times. And when you feel like you're connecting with your kid, be curious. Ask really honest, open, curious questions. What's going on with you? What's going on with you when we fight? What's going on with you and your friends? What is your class like, you know?
When my daughters go somewhere, I don't ask them where they're going because I want to spy on them. I'm curious where they're going. You know, I kind of want to know where they're heading.
Well, and that's good news right off the bat. You don't want to spy on them. You just want to into their world, right?
Yeah.
I suspect you give off a vibe as a father that would suggest that you're really just curious, you know? That said, the adolescent years, a lot of kids don't want us to know everything about their lives.
Of course.
They're going to hold back. And it's hard for parents to find that line between, okay, what's normal and when are they trying to pull one over on me? And they're going to be pushing the line
right. In
terms of safety in a way that I'm uncomfortable with. That's why those meta level communications are really important at other times, mm-hmm. because, you know, then you just get anxiety when they're heading out for the night. And that's the worst thing we want for parents. That's the last thing we want.
You can also tell if you have a pretty good working relationship with your kid. Like, I will text my 16-year-old after school and say, where are you? And I get an answer. It's not, why do you want to know? It's like, I'm either at play practice at the radio station or at Stone Grove Guitar. And I just want to know where he is. And he answers me.
Right.
You know?
Right.
When you were talking about talk to your kid, have a conversation, you know, if you have a lecture in mind, save it for another time, just have a conversation. We all know this because when we were kids, I hated when my mom would lecture me, or I hated when she accused me of things I didn't do. But how come I find myself doing that, even though I hated it as a kid?
It's this natural parental, impulse, because our parents did it. It's how we were raised, right? And fear worked for us. You know, like we were afraid of our parents, a lot of us. Our kids aren't afraid of us.
Right.
So our lectures aren't going to work. So I always prefer like kind of an open communication, because your kid, in all likelihood, almost guaranteed knows your lecture. There are times and sessions where I will stop a parent in the middle of a lecture and I'll tell a kid, you take over. I want to hear the lecture from your point of view. They never miss it. They know what their parents want to say. They know where their parents stand on virtually everything under the sun.
Yeah.
So you can spare them the lecture and just spend some time connecting with them. And texting is an underrated way of doing that, by the way.
John, you mentioned that layer of fear seems to have gone away from the last generation till this one. Why did it go away, and is it better, worse, or just different that it is gone?
It doesn't mean no respect, does it? Because people say, oh, kids don't respect their parents anymore. I think they do. They just don't fear them like we did.
I think that's exactly right. Starting with that, Wendy, I think our kids absolutely respect us unless we find ways to lose that respect. And some parents do that almost with unwittingly, without having any intention of doing that. But our kids do respect us on the whole. And fear has come along in part because when we were kids, that was our only communication with our parents. You know, our parenting wasn't really a verb a generation ago, right?
Right.
I mean, you know, like people weren't spending time like trying to connect with their kids and do some of the things that we're trying to do.
Yeah.
People didn't go to talks or read books like my book a generation ago. This wouldn't have worked out. Now we have this better way of connecting with our kids. And it's amazing because kids are actually, I think, smarter than we thought
they would
be.
We'll be back with more. Sorry, Joe.
And more connected than we thought they would be. And we can learn a lot from them about their world, about the technology that's evolved in their world, about the speed with which things move in their world. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a lot to learn from our kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny when my 13-year-old says something to me, like I'll say something, he'll go, why are you mad at me? I said, I'm not mad. And he says, what about that tone? And I said, the tone? I'm the one who's supposed to be saying to a 13-year-old, I don't like that tone. He says it to me. But he's right.
Right, right. Yeah, and listen, in fairness to us parents, I think we're entitled to a few non-negotiables in our house, right? A few things are not okay, right?
At least a few rules.
Not a dozen, but three or four.
You can't play with Bill's toys.
Right, that should be a rule.
Absolutely a rule. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
That should be a rule. Hold that thought. More with Dr. John Duffy in just a little bit. If you want to join in, you can at 312-981-7200. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
We've had John Duffy, Dr. John Duffy, on the show several times, and after having him on the show, I wanted my kids to see him, and they do, and I don't want to hog him, Bill, because I see Dr. John Duffy off the air.
Sure.
So let's have the listeners have some questions. Is that
Absolutely.
A good idea?
Absolutely. Yeah, 312-981-7200 will get that done.
Nanette.
Hi.
Hi, Nanette.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm enjoying this discussion. My question for Dr. Duffy is, my husband and I, we have a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old, and we discipline differently. Our 10-year-old, he's a boy, and he is a very good child, but sometimes he acts up, and my husband's more, like, quick to react, and
right.
I try and read all the books and, you know, do a lot of research, and so I'm more calm and, you know, kind of direct with him. And he's conflicted, I think, as a child, because he's getting two different, you know, types of communication from us. So what do you recommend?
Well, there's a couple of thoughts here, Nanette. First of all, one thing you're teaching your 10-year-old is to be adaptable. And it sounds like you and your husband both love your son. And so he knows that he's coming from that place to start with, right? My parents love me. They just
right.
approach me in a different way. So nothing right. you're telling me suggests, ooh, it's really critical. Something has to change right away. But I think it might be useful for you and your husband to sit down at some point and talk about how it is that you want to raise your kids and what vibe you want to have in your house as you raise your kids. And and one thing I would encourage you to try is, if he is consistently kind of the disciplinary heavy and you're more the connector, I would take
right.
a week and I would switch and just see how that plays out in your house.
Okay, yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We'll give that a whirl.
All right. Best of luck to you.
Thank you, Nanette.
Yeah, thank you.
Tell me what that switch accomplishes. What does that do?
It tells your kids that they can connect with both of you.
Yeah.
And that at any given point in time, you're going to be parented by either one of your parents. So
yeah.
there's this flexibility and fluidity in the household that isn't normally there. And what Nanette is describing, this happens in a lot of houses. You know, oftentimes one parent's the heavy. It's more often the dad than the mom. And then the mom is more the connector. And when I push
Or the apologist, as I'm called.
Oh. Yes, yes, yes.
Oh.
And when you push each other into the opposite positions,
yeah.
usually you don't completely assume the opposite positions, so you tend to do more of both.
Sure.
So really that's meeting somewhere in the middle. You know
what
I mean?
Do you tell the kids you're switching, or do you do that covertly?
I think you can tell the kids,
yeah,
like, you know, hey, this is going to be something we're going to try, something
right.
a little bit different this week, and we're going to see how it goes.
Interesting.
And kids like experiments like this. They like, they're playful, and
they
they're
like
willing to
see
try
us
something
fail.
New.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Well, and they like to know, hey, we're part of it. You know, we parents, we're not perfect. We're part of the issue. If something's
right.
not working perfectly in this house, we have to work on it too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
All right. This is a fantastic question. There are a lot of grandparents that take care of their grandkids. Either something has happened to the parents, or in a daycare situation, or after school with a parent working. And is this Schwartz?
Yes.
Hi, Schwartz. You have a
mm-hmm.
question for Dr. John Duffy?
I do. I'm asking the rules of the road for someone who will become a formal mother-in-law in the next 2 years. And shortly thereafter, the plan is that I will become grand-mère in our family, which is grandmother.
Right.
And I would like the rules of the road for this century.
You know, it's funny that you asked this, Schwartz, because I think those rules are changing as we go here. And I encourage grandparents or soon-to-be grandparents and their child and child-in-law to sit down and talk about, oh, well, what role do you want us to play? Because we want to play an active role. I'm going on the assumption that you do. And, you know, and what role you're going to play as caretaker, as disciplinarian, as playmate, and kind of set that standard early on in the relationship. And kudos to you for kind of getting on this early in the game, because the earlier you establish that discussion, which is probably an ongoing discussion, not a one-time only discussion, the earlier you establish that, the better, and it's going to work, and the less tension there's going to be between you and the generation right behind you in terms of caretaking with the kids.
Okay, now let's add another caveat to that.
Okay.
I happen to be a single mom.
Okay.
And I don't think that the her father's wife will be involved. I think her father will be. So how do we do that?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think more and more there are situations like yours in place. So I don't know that my advice really changes a whole lot.
Okay.
In fact, I think you might have a little more flexibility, a little more play, a little more time with the kids, and that might make things work even better. You know, parents are so busy these days, and when there is a grandparent who is willing to be involved and eager to be involved in caretaking with the kids, most of us parents, we're really, really happy to know that. So I think if you let the next generation know, hey, I'm available and I want to know my grandkids, regardless of what happens with the grandparents on the other side, I think that puts you in a good spot.
Okay, so being available is understandable. Is it realistic to say to one's offspring, well, I would be a grand-mère as I have been a mother and continue to be a mother? Does that work or no?
Do you mean in terms of like taking care and disciplining the kids and, you know, and that kind of thing? Like kind of a co-parenting type thing?
Oh, with my daughter? Oh, God, that wouldn't be a good idea.
Okay, you're way ahead of me then.
All the police and the National Guard. I would take a secondary role, but is it fair to think that she would understand who I am? Because, you know, she's had 3 decades at this. So.
Yeah, but I think it's an important discussion to have because these roles can get really blurry and boundaries can get crossed and there can be ill will established. So I think the earlier you have the talk about what your role is, the better. And I have to tell you, Schwartz, it sounds like you know kind of where the boundaries need to be and ought to be. So I think you're starting from a really, really good place. But I would encourage the discussion because you seem like you're primed to have it soon.
Schwartz, we have to run, and I have to say, may the Schwartz be with you because it's just fun to do.
Oh, that's fun.
You can pick up John Duffy's book, The Available Parent, and really there's so many helpful hints in there. You will definitely be amazed. Thank you so much for calling. The Available Parent, he's Dr. John Duffy. And let me just see if Peter can hang on. Hey, Peter.
Yeah, hi.
We would like to take your question, but we have to break for news. Can you hang on? It's a pretty important question, and I think Dr. Duffy would like to address that.
Oh, and in person off the air?
No. We're going
to do news.
Can you hang on, and then we'll take your question on the air. Awesome. Something that's very important. We'll take a quick break. Do some news. 312-981-7200. Dr. John Duffy, what's your website?
It is www.drjohnduffy.com. And I've got a free parenting series at parentbetternow.com.
All right, cool. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. It is WGN. Thank you so much, Kim. And whether you have kids or not, you're going to someday. And it seems like there are always parenting issues that we need help with. I'm telling you, someone told me in radio, one of the people in sales when I was first pregnant, and I said, I don't know what to do. I never babysat. What do you do? And she said, you know what? Just love them. Do your best and just love them. Dr. John Duffy is with us today. Is that pretty accurate advice?
Boy, do I love that advice. I mean, you know, as we talk in between things, you know, in the end, what is parenting about? If you just love them, and that is the metric from which you address your kids, you can't really go too far off the rails, right? I mean, if that's your sole goal, I'm going to show my kid every day how much I love him or
right.
her. Man, you're winning. You're winning as a parent, no doubt.
Thank you, Ella, for giving me that wonderful advice. We have a caller who's been on hold through the news, and this is an important thing that we'd like you to address right now, Dr. Duffy. Peter, did you have a question for Dr. John Duffy?
Yes. My child, best friend, committed suicide. How do you prevent copycats, and how do you tell the signs? I mean, that something like that could happen, you know, because my child was grieving, and... you know, I'm just a regular guy. I don't know. I mean, you know, it's...
And you're scared, as a parent, you're scared and thinking about your son doing that. I can't blame you.
No.
Well, it's not my son, but it's my daughter.
Well, Peter, you know, first of all, I'm so sorry that your daughter is suffering that loss. It happens way, way, way too often among young people. So I'm hoping other people are listening as well who have been in this circumstance. My bias with your daughter, what I think a lot of us do, because suicide is such an uncomfortable topic, is it becomes clandestine and we don't talk about it. So the first thing I encourage you to do is to talk to her about it, and talk to her about it a lot, and let her say even her darkest thoughts about it, you know, and let that line weigh out. Let her say whatever it is she needs to say. And she might have some things to say that are uncomfortable for you to hear, you know, that she has felt that way in the past. She knew her friend felt that way. You never know. I've dealt with this so many times. You never know what a kid's going to come up with. And if you feel like, boy, I just don't know if I have the tools it takes to help her through that, I don't want you to hesitate for a moment to get her in front of a mental health professional to talk that through. Because as parents, one of the most important things we can do is use all the tools at our disposal. And sometimes we carry this stigma about seeing people like me. But my strong bias would be if you feel like, she's a little withdrawn, a little regressive, and I really, I don't want her sliding down any kind of depressive slope, definitely get her in to see somebody. But in the meantime, talk about it, and talk about it openly, and talk about it a lot. And I'll throw out one other thought. Oftentimes when kids commit suicide, we tend to focus so much on those last moments of that child's life. Allow her some time to celebrate the years before that time, because sometimes that helps kids through it, to kind of tell funny stories and to remember their friend in a way that isn't just tragic. Helps kids a lot to get kind of past the grief part. Go ahead, please.
Doctor, you know, these kids are never forthcoming. I mean, they'll tell you only what they want to tell you. You know what I mean?
Right, right. And if you feel that way, if you feel like, boy, you know, I've really, really tried to get her to open up and she's really clammed up about this, then I would absolutely suggest getting her in front of a mental health professional. You might start with a school social worker, but somebody outpatient, a therapist in private practice can help her. The other thing you might suggest is a ritual. A lot of kids get into the idea of, like, you know, planting a tree or putting up a plaque or doing something in terms of volunteer work in the name of the child who committed suicide. And sometimes that gives them something to do with their grief instead of just, like, sitting with it and suffering with it. So,
and maybe it helps them to talk about it, too. Once they're, you know, if they plant a tree, oh, I did this in honor of my friend. Maybe that'll open up some lines of communication with you as well, Peter.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, but to your point, Peter, I get your point. Like, it is so tough to get kids to open up about this stuff, in part because they don't know any better than we do how to talk about it. You know, it's such a tragic loss. It's so sudden and unexpected. And too often kids blame themselves, you know, via social media or something like that. Boy, I saw that last text, or I saw that last status update. I think I could have read something in there. There maybe is something I should have done. So it's really important to kind of console your child and let them know, no, this isn't your fault. This isn't your problem. It's just your loss, and we're going to help you get through the loss.
Hey, thank you so much.
Good luck to you, Peter.
Best of luck.
John, I think there has to be a way to diplomatically say to your kid, if you want to talk about it, I'm here. If you're not comfortable, I get it. Take your time, but if you do want to talk about it, I'm glad to talk about it.
And that is the diplomatic way to say it, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, right. The worst thing you can do, I think, is to force your kid. Like, you know, we are going to talk about this right now.
Yeah.
It's part of the reason I push the word available. Let your kid know you're available. Sometimes they'll take you up on that, and sometimes they won't. But if they know you're there, that helps.
That makes a big difference.
It does.
Someone's texting, wants to know if you're taking new patients. His name is Dr. John Duffy. The website, drjohnduffy.com.
I'm always taking new patients. I'm a pretty busy guy, but feel free to reach out via the website. And if I'm not the guy to help, I'll help you find who will.
And again, the name of the book, The Available Parent. It's available. Where's the best place to get that?
Amazon.com.
The Available Book.
The Available Book, for sure.
All right, we have to take a break, and then we'll try and get to a couple more questions here, but I have to throw this out here. You had mentioned not being friends with your son or daughter, your children, but having a communicative relationship with them, and someone has taken issue with that because with all these bad scenarios, suicide, heroin addiction, depression, this whole epidemic, the new parenting BS does not work. Stop bashing our parents' way of doing it. It was much more stable. So let's take a break. You digest that. And
absolutely.
We'll discuss it. He's Dr. John Duffy and Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. All right. Do we go back to questions or do we go back to that texter with Dr. John Duffy that was saying, you know, this whole new parenting phase is a bunch of BS. We got to go back to the days when we controlled our kids.
What do you think, John? We'll address that a little bit.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I have been accused many times of being kind of the soft parenting advocate. And I get the thought because the old school ways really felt like they worked. What I'm suggesting isn't that we stop parenting. We're just buddies with our kids, right? I just think the old ways don't work in that our kids aren't afraid. So in order to gain the leverage we need to do the parenting we need to do, I'm saying let's have a lot of positive interactions with our kids. So in those times when we need to set a limit, lay down some discipline, have a consequence, clarify some rules, that we have the connection there to do it so that our kids are going to heed our words. So I understand the criticism, absolutely. But I think the strength in parenting has shifted in a generation, and I think it comes from connection more than it comes from fear.
Yeah.
All right, we may have time for one question here, and Barbara is on the line. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm pretty well desperate here. I have an adult son that was diagnosed as bipolar with psychotic features this past July, and he is still saying that there's nothing wrong with him. So I've just about ran out of ideas to try to get him to face the fact that he needs help, and he's just totally refusing it. What can I do?
Right. Barbara, can I ask, first of all, I'm so sorry you're struggling with this. This is one of the most difficult things as a parent that any of us can deal with, right? A condition where we really cannot easily reason with our kids. How old is your son?
He's 27.
Has he been hospitalized in the past?
He was right off the bat for the mandatory 5 days.
Okay, know? Right.
Then they released him, and but he just keeps saying, I'm not mentally ill. I don't need any help, and he does.
Right. Well, you know, there is a prevailing theory that a lot of my contemporaries would support that would say, you know what you need is tough love, put him out on the street, and kind of let whatever happens happen. I have a real tough time with that because I put myself in a parent's shoes and I think, you know, boy, I've got a 20-year-old son. I don't know if I could do that.
No, I can't.
So short of that, what you probably can do is leverage your position with him a little bit. I assume he lives under your roof or he's dependent upon you. So I would, at a time when he is more reasonable than not, really leverage that position and say, you know what, we're going to go in and we're going to see somebody. And that doesn't have to be kind of this immediate threat of an inpatient psychiatric hospitalization, but at the very least, a visit with a qualified therapist who's worked with bipolar disorder or with a psychiatrist who has, and at least get the ball rolling in terms of getting him the care he needs. And, you know, once you get him in front of somebody, I usually encourage parents, give me an hour or two and I'll take it from there. And most good clinicians are able to do that. So my bias would be, let's not make your job to be his therapist and his psychiatrist for the rest of his life. Let's make it your job just to get him in front of the right people in the short run. Is that fair?
That sounds wonderful. Thank you so much for
Absolutely.
Helping me.
Good My luck, pleasure. Barbara. And even just to say, let's give it a try. Let's just, you know, promise me this one time. We can talk about it after that.
Right. Let's see how it goes. You may or may not like this person, and we'll regroup after that.
Quote, unquote, tough love. Would you never see a time where that's the way to the best route? What do you think?
I think it's a very, very, very last resort. But I have to tell you, Bill, I rarely, if I can't remember a time in the last 5 years where I've run into a situation where I thought that's the right answer.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. Yeah.
I couldn't do it.
Well, our instincts are all against that. Because you go, we're dealing with somebody that we love. Why would we bring the tough into that?
Right, right. And the theory is sound. I like the theory. I just don't think most of us have it in us as parents to be able to kind of put our kid out on the street. The one trickiest part of it is addiction. Yeah. You know, kind of advanced addiction. Sometimes there are no options because you're dealing with somebody who's unreasonable and deteriorating and slowly killing themselves.
Right. And refusing help.
Exactly. And refusing help. So in that circumstance, I can see where you have to exercise tough love.
This is the second time that Breaking Bad has been referenced on the show, but there, I don't know if you were a fan of the show or not, but there's a scene where one of the characters, Jesse, his parents obviously just cannot handle him anymore. And they won't let him in the house anymore. And that was in the whole run of the show. That was one of the hardest episodes because as a parent, you go, boy, that so goes against the grain of what you want to do. You want to pull him in and go, I love you. Don't screw your life up.
But wasn't he stealing from the family to get to? I mean, there are various times that
there's too much toxic behavior, right? So much toxic behavior. And when you have other kids and other family members, everybody's being affected. At some point, you do have to do something to protect everybody else.
Yeah.
And the same note that Barbara called in about her adult son, there's someone who is texting, and it would be kind of the same thing. 16-year-old who has anger issues and thinks nothing is up. How do you approach 16-year-old who seems to have social anxiety, then anger when suggestions to get involved comes up? Same thing. At least try and get them in front of someone just to talk, and they may enjoy it.
Absolutely. And they probably will enjoy it. And the way to get them to talk to somebody is to say, hey, you know what? Let's try it one time. And I would vet that person. I would talk to that person and make sure their tone is casual enough and open enough that they are likely to connect with your 16-year-old.
And it's worth a try. I wouldn't give an ultimatum. Just, hey, try it once. Let's see how it goes.
Absolutely.
And then maybe you could go, let's try it twice and see how it goes.
Yep.
It wasn't so bad.
Exactly. Exactly. And if the therapist is doing their job on the other end, it wouldn't be so bad.
Thank you so much for coming by. Your book is amazing, The Available Parent. Really, I don't know who is the perfect parent, and we all could use some help. The book is great, some great tips, great advice. Dr. John Duffy, you can reach him at drjohnduffy.com, and you have some other parenting things going on, you said?
Yeah, I've got a free parenting video series. It's a 5-part series at a website called parentbetternow.com.
I'll have to watch it, and I'll let you know if it worked for me.
Awesome.
Try it one time, Wendy.
One time.
Just one time. If you like it, we'll take a look at having you back.
What is it, parent?
Parentsbetternow.com.
All right.
John, thanks very much for being here. Have a great rest of the week. That's Dr. John Duffy. We're going to take a quick break. We'll find out what Steve Bertrand has on the Wintrust Business Lunch in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.